Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, joining you from post-production as we continue with our second part of our discussion on international prospects with Ignacio Risotto of The Stepien at Airball on Twitter, which is E-Y-R-E-B-A-L-L. And like last week's episode, we decided to split this one into two parts for time constraints. So this is going to be the second part of that discussion of the episode we released on Monday. So we hope you enjoy. I'd like to take a second to shout out the network that helps distribute our show, Armchair Media. Armchair is a collection of 50-plus podcasts, including ours, trying to localize the sports world a little bit more. We've been with them since March and have enjoyed growing our audience with theirs. Starting June 1st, BetOnline will serve as a title sponsor for Armchair as well as our show. This will open up the possibility to develop merchandise lines as well as potentially host live events once we return to a semblance of normalcy. In addition to BetOnline coming aboard, Armchair will now serve as the host network for the world's largest skateboarding podcast, The Nine Club. Hosted by professional skaters Chris Roberts and Kelly Hart, The Nine Club talks every week with the biggest names in skating. They're on social media at The Nine Club. To see more, search Armchair Media wherever you get your pods. Also, check us out on Armchair's website, armchairmedianetwork.com, and their socials at Armchair Media. Armchair Media, those who can, do. Those who don't, can't. Take a seat.
Should we move on to Georgios Kalaitzakis then?
Yeah, you can talk about him.
I mean, along the lines of a complimentary wing, I really like Kalaitzakis. Have talked about him before. Just a guy who's a pretty impressive slasher, has good size, competent ball handler, fairly intelligent passer. The shot is the thing that will have to be straightened out for sure. But once that happens, I think the overall wing package is really nice because he also, in my viewing, is definitely a strong team defender. So just a guy at 6'8 who really has, I think, pretty much everything you're looking for out of a complimentary wing. And I think that down the road at some point we'll see him in the NBA and is a very attractive stash option.
Yeah, to me, Kalaitzakis is... The thing I really like about him, not as a prospect, just a basketball watcher, the thing I like about him is that he plays with a lot of energy and he plays like 110% all of the time. And that has, ramifications to his game, which are both positive and negative. So like he plays with a lot of energy on defense. He doesn't give up on plays. He comes back in transition. I remember when he played at the under 20 European championships, he had like one chase down block per game, which was kind of impressive because those plays can be huge swings, both in momentum and in the scoreboard. But he puts a lot of effort in what he does. And on offense, when he plays more of a secondary role here, which will be closer to his NBA role if he reaches that level for his domestic team. But for when he played for the Greek junior team, he was the main guy there and he took it seriously. Like he was like, at least what I saw from him was taking seriously that go-to guy role and just, shoulder that load. Just going out there, realizing that you know, looking for a shot when you're the best player on the team and the best scorer on the team is not being selfish, which happens, the contrary happens to other prospects we'll discuss later. And I do really like that energy and that approach to the game. The negative ramifications of that is that he plays too sped up at times. On defense, he kind of tends to gamble a lot in the passing lanes and can be off position. And on offense, he has improved this year, but he's prone to turnovers and also prone to a really specific type of turnovers, which is getting called for charges and offensive fouls. I was watching the under 20 tournament, and I realized that the best way to defend Kalaitzakis is just standing in front of him. He will try to run you over. And those are things that he needs to develop mentally in that sense and try to play a bit more in control, even though that will take a bit of his fiery competitor type, but he needs to play a bit more in control, and that will be key for him for any professional level he ends up reaching, because in the NBA or with a veteran coach in Europe, you make two mistakes and you get benched. So that's going to be the key for him. And also what Max mentioned, the shooting really, really needs to come around for him. He showed some versatility, some interesting touch of movement, but I do think the shooting mechanics need a lot of work, especially the shooting arm, the shooting elbow kind of flies out. So that affects a bit of his aim and his arc on the shot. So that really needs to come around at some point.
All right, so I think we should move on to our next guy. Yeah, I don't have anything else. All right, so our next guy is Rokas Jokubaitis, who is a Lithuanian point guard. Can't think of where he played this year. One of you can help me. Basically, like 6'4", really, really impressive passer at his size. Someone who is really great in pick and roll. Like he manipulates with his eyes. He gets into the lane and he makes lay down passes. He can make skip passes, and he's like really strong too. Like he's a crafty driver. Though he's not super bursty, his second steps and his off arm uses and his strength make him a pretty solid finisher. And then his shooting results have been really good. Like his shooting numbers have been really great throughout his career. But the big thing with him is that he's just really passive as a creator. He's not a guy who like goes out of his way to create his own shot. Yeah, and I saw, I think our friend PD who was on the last episode tweeted out something that Mike Vorkunov said on the Wasserman pod about Frank Ntilikina, which was that he had to learn that self-creation isn't necessarily selfish. And I think that's something that's maybe a trap. I thought it was interesting that he applied to Rokas that I think is really true. That he's in that he's such a talented passer. I think he gets stuck in that mentality where I think he maybe has some more creation potential than he shows, than he often shows. And then defensively, I mean, he's pretty strong at 6'4". He's a solid event creator. He's smart in his rotations. So yeah, I mean, a guy who, like, because of his lack of real high-end creation and burst and maybe that pull-up shooting is probably not ever more than like a backup point guard or like a solid combo guard, which is why he's like I've talked about before, a guy I wish I could rank higher than I will just because of how much positional value really does matter with these guys. But yeah, Rokas is a really talented prospect and someone who is super fun to watch. So.
Yeah, about the conversation with PD, I was actually the one talking about him on Twitter about Rokas. Oh, what are you doing? And this is something that I've been thinking about like probably the last month, and I've been talking to other people through Twitter about it, which is how limited our self-creator or how limited self-creation at times is in certain developmental, I don't want to say in the entire Europe, but I do think that prospects get beaten into them from a young age that they need to play quote unquote the right way. And to play the right way at times is seen as not looking for your own shot and defer to teammates and looking to pass first. And then if you can pass, then make a play for you. But that's selfishly unselfish. Like one prospect who didn't declare this year, but who drove me nuts with it was Carlos Alloson from Spain. Mm. So Alloson, what he would do, I would say, I don't want to exaggerate, but three times a game at least, he had a slightly contested layup coming into the lane, and he would make a kickout pass even though his teammate was covered. So
the Rondo influence.
Yeah, so that, okay, great, you can make a pass me there. Wow, really great hang time. It doesn't mean shit. It doesn't mean shit because you changed a quote-unquote kind of difficult shot for a worse shot, which makes you reset the offense, which makes either your teammate takes that shot and generally misses, or you have to reset the offense with, what, 6 seconds on the clock, which also leads to a bad shot. So passing and being unselfish is not, at times, they don't go hand in hand. So you need to know when to pass too. So, and that's something that I do think Jokubaitis has shown some scoring ability, especially for the Lithuanian junior teams. I do think he's too maybe over controlled when he plays for Schalgeri, but he is also unselfish to a fault at times. And he's limited as a self-creator, not only in the sense that he looks to pass first and then the first two teammates, but also I don't think he's developed enough as a pull-up shooter. Like the numbers as a shooter this year have been really good, but he's not really someone who takes a lot of pull-ups, like creating separation, or he can punish you if you go under the screen, and he can, you know, also if you go under the screen, he can get to the mid-range and, you know, stop on a dime and make a shot over smaller defenders. But he's not someone who's going to do an isolation off the dribble three. And that limits, I think, his ability to be a primary creator at the NBA level.
Compared to other positions and archetypes, I don't think I worry about it as much with like a backup point guard type, but how much do you worry about him being sort of a jack of all trades and a master of none?
Well, that's a great question. But I think he can master the passing. Like,
okay.
I do think he's one of the best passers, at least in that 2000s generation. He's born in 2000s. I think he's still 19 years old. He was born in November. So I think the passing is his calling card, but is his passing, and we go back to what we talk about Maledon, about his passing not being as functional at the NBA level. If he doesn't have that scoring gravity to him, teams are just going to play the pass. Defenders are just going to say, okay, you know what? Go ahead, try to score. You're going to try to pass. We know you're going to try to pass. So that's when he becomes, like you said, jack of all trades, master of none. If this lack of scoring gravity to him makes his passing a bit less effective at an NBA setting.
Now, should we move on now to a guard who has a very different, I think,
yeah. Definitely.
Yes, yeah, strong suit. Which would be Arturs Kurucs, who is a really lethal shooter, off the dribble, off the move, off the catch. But just the question is whether he's a point guard or whether he's more of an undersized two, a combo. So what do you make of Arturs Kurucs? Do you think he's more of a lead guard, or do you think that he's more of that combo variety?
You know, statistically wise, he was worse, really worse, and I mean really, really worse when he's not next to a point guard. So what I mean by that is when he, this year he played for BEF Riga back in Latvia, where he was born. And he generally, for Latvian junior teams, he played with Artur Sagars, which is another Latvian point guard. He's more of a traditional point guard than Kurucs. And in both of those cases, he was able to maintain a positive assist to turnover ratio. He was able to show some versatility in terms of creation, show ability to run pick and rolls, make passes on the move, make driving kicks. Not exactly a live dribble passer. He was always someone who's at best when he has a backup plan, but he is quick to make those passes as soon as he picks up his dribble. So the versatility as a passer is there. But when he's the main creator, which he was for Baskonia junior teams and for some Latvian teams where Artur Sagars was injured, I think it was the under-19 World Cup of last year, he just racks up turnover after turnover. And I just think that he needs that creator next to him to, because I don't know, I think, let me put it this way, I think he can create occasionally, but I don't know if he can shoulder the load of 30 minutes of being a primary creator. I do think his offensive repertoire and his passing can be a bit, how should I say this? You know, a bit repetitive, and opponents can pick up in that repetitiveness and pick his passes. And that's when the turnovers come. So I think he needs that primary creator next to him to be the best version of himself.
Yeah, and I'll say for someone who is as good of a shooter as he is in all facets of shooting, really, I think that definitely makes it easier for his passing to shine, where defenses are going to have to commit a lot of attention to his off-ball shooting or even some on-ball shooting at times, and then the passing window is open. But yeah, I certainly agree with you, Ignacio. And that tournament without Zagars was definitely telling that I don't think he is a primary guy, but he certainly has like a really interesting collection of skills at his size, with shooting, like you said, being the big one. So yeah, I mean, definitely like a serious prospect. I mean,
yeah, I mean, being able to self-create and have that scoring mentality and be just effective at shooting. I don't remember maybe I'm misremembering, but I don't remember a single tournament where he shot under 40%. And this year he's on 40% from three on 7 attempts per 36 minutes, which is a ton. His three-point attempt rate is 54%. So three-point shooting is a big part of his game. And also, like we've been saying, the versatility on that shot, the ability to create space for himself, the ability to be assisted by screens and punish the defense as soon as he sees an opening, the ability to get to the mid-range, stop on a dime, and elevate over defenders. And that versatility as a shooter is something that it's always valuable. With Kurucs, the question will always be, what else? Like, what else does he bring? Is his occasional passing good enough to consider him at least as a secondary initiator? Is his strength, which maybe is the only positive physical trait, I would say, is his strength enough to make him a passable defender, or is he going to be undersized and against bigger twos? Because he's not necessarily a two, but he might be facing some twos at the NBA level. So that's the key for Kurucs. What else can he add to his game beyond the shooting to be an NBA player?
So, I mean, on the topic of guards, how do you think Jan Mahdar fits into this whole equation as a potential, I mean, one would think backup point guard at some point in the NBA?
I mean, I really love Jan Mahdar. I think he's probably one of the underrated, that word is probably overused, but I think he's one of the underrated players in this draft. Quick recap from Mahdar, 6'2", just dynamic scorer, someone who's able to let me put it this way. He played for Israel under 20 team next to Deni Avdija, and when Israel needed a basket, they went to Avdija. But when Avdija went cold, they went to Mahdar, and Mahdar was even better at creating points than Avdija was. So I really love his dynamic scoring ability. I really love his ability also to pass the ball. I feel like he's more of a volume passer in terms of, like, he's going to have a ton of assists, but also he's going to have a ton of turnovers. But when he's on the move, and he's really quick, when he's on the move, not only the quickness in his first step, but the quickness mid-drive is really impressive. And when he attracts defenders, he's going to be able to see the open man and make a pass at times from the live dribble. He's not someone who really picks up his dribble a ton in traffic like other prospects we mentioned previously. So I really feel he's underrated. But again, and this is what concerns me about him, If I have to go from that under 20 tournament, which was back in July 2019, I gotta take him, I don't want to say first round, but early second round. But then again, I don't think he ever reached that level of play, either on previous Israeli junior teams or for his domestic team in Hapoel Tel Aviv. And that, you know, he wasn't able to, the film looks great for Mahdar, still looks great, still looks like a dynamic scorer, but, you know, he wasn't able to replicate statistically the efficiency he had at that tournament in any other tournament or season. So that kind of concerns me. That definitely concerns me, because which Mahdar is the real one? Is the flashes we've seen at the under 20 tournament, or is everything else we've seen from him?
Yeah, I mean, I worry that was just a ridiculous stretch of hot shooting at the U20s last summer. Because like you said, with Hapoel Tel Aviv, it just wasn't as great. I mean, across all leagues last year, he shot under 30% from three. I mean, he just wasn't the same player at that level of competition. But yeah, I just want to see more of him to see really where his consistency and if he can improve more statistically. So
he just feels to me like someone who needs to be reined in. Like he, like you said, Ignacio, he is like very much a volume passer. He makes lots of inaccurate passes. I think defensively, his aggressiveness is a definite positive, and it helps with like fighting against post mismatches. For example, he's like, I'd say, outlier good there. But he's also over aggressive defending at the point of attack and gets himself into dangerous spots. And just like can overturn his hips and stuff like that. Just I feel like there are a lot of positive aspects to him that still need to be refined before he could be, you know, a reliable NBA backup point guard.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we're.
You know. Sorry. Yeah, that's fair. I do think I want to clarify something, and that's he still looks really good on tape, like from playing for Hapoel Tel Aviv. That dynamic scoring ability still looks just the same as it was on that under 20 tournament. He will wow you once or twice a game with tough shots, but maybe even though he looks good on film, he might not be able to sustain that for more than 10 games, which is they play 7 games for each FIBA tournament. So what does that mean, not only for his domestic league competitions, but also for an 82-game NBA season? Is he going to be a hot shooter in November and December, or is he going to be able to hold up to that entire season? But yeah, I definitely need to watch more from Dar, but I would understand if a team watched the under 20 tournament and said, let's draft this guy and stash him, because if he ends up showing what he showed in that tournament again next season, you're not going to find Madar in the second round. You're going to find him early second round, maybe late first round.
Yeah, I will say, I do think that for the backup point guard position specifically, that sort of, I mean, I don't want to call him erratic, but just the variability is probably not something that's desirable. Like, that was something that worried me with, like, Tremont Waters last year, that, like, a lot of his especially defensive impact is reliant upon him taking, like, pretty crazy risks that you're probably not going to want a backup point guard taking all the time. Like, I feel like that's a position where you want someone who's steady and reliable. So I have some added concerns with just his role protection being as a backup point guard, given that he is like a little bit variable.
Yeah, that's fair. I would say that he might be the opposite to that archetype of point guard we've been talking about through the podcast. He might be the opposite of that, you know, really point guard who plays in control and doesn't take bad shots and is selfishly unselfish. Like I said, Madar is the opposite. He doesn't have a problem taking shots for himself, which is good when it works, but when it doesn't work, is like you say, Max, is can he? It brings up questions like, can he be that point guard? So, yeah.
Should we move on to Borisa Simonic?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've already talked about him in this episode, so we'll just go over this quickly. But arguably the best, or one of the best, big man shooters in the class, but wildly passive, not a mobile guy. Like when he can stay in the paint around the rim, I think he's pretty good protecting the rim. But it's when he leaves the paint that things get ugly. Nonetheless, I mean, the three and rim protection archetype is very valuable. And I mean, if you can figure out his mentality, he's you know, a potentially very valuable commodity. But I think mentality is a thing that's hard to straighten out.
Yeah, and I'll quickly echo the shooting goodness. I mean, at least on Real GM, every year of his career, aside from one, he's at 38% from three or above, which is just ridiculous consistency for a guy his size. So yeah, I mean, I think basically echoing everything Max said, he's got some really special shooting upside if he can rein in that crippling passivity. So
yeah, I love the mechanics with him, like you said. I stopped buying into Simonic maybe 3 or 4 years ago. A lot of people talked about Simonic in a similar fashion as we talk about Aleksej Pokusevski right now, but with way less first round hype. And I think I stopped, and a lot of people have stopped buying into that on-ball potential, and just, if you buy into him being a stretch five who can be at least a neutral rim protector, then yeah, there's definitely value in that, at least in the second round.
Yeah. Our last guy in Pauly Bua.
Yep.
Yeah, so Pauly Bua plays for Pesaro in the Serie A. He is a 6'7" wing, really, really toolsy. That's kind of, and like, he can really jump, is athletic, kind of where the good ends. He might be the worst defender in this draft class. He is objectively terrible. He has absolutely no clue what he's doing on the defensive end. And he has some moments where like he makes some plays because he is really toolsy. Like he's quick in the short area. He's long. He's pretty explosive. But in terms of like communicating as a team defender and just being aware of what's around him, I mean, I can't think of like the last time I've seen a prospect who gets cut, like back cut as much as he does. Or honestly, like players will just cut right in front of him and he won't see it. I mean, Ibua, like, and again, offensively, like, he's 6'7" and skinny, but he's kind of a big. His jumper has never been super productive, and he can't really dribble or pass. But not someone who's like a really real prospect to me, but someone who has like an inexplicable amount of hype. I think he's in the top 60 on ESPN's Best Available, which is kind of insane considering what he actually is, besides just like a bag of tools. So, Ibua, like, the guy who's difficult for me to take seriously.
I don't think it's hard to understand why he's thought of highly by ESPN. I mean, he is very impressive physically. Like, he is well-built. He is very physically overwhelming in the Italian league. He's another of the, like, Precious Achiuwa school, but not Precious Achiuwa's size. And so he is, like, very much like a 6'8 big man. I mean, like, 20% of his offense was putbacks. And 12% was cuts, 11% pick and roll man. Like he very much plays like a big man. I'm just like not a high feel player. At least for me, I don't see why people keep chasing these like 6'7" energy big men, because it doesn't seem like any of them ever actually get any minutes in the NBA.
Yeah, I don't want to rag on Ibua too much, but yeah, I don't think he's an NBA prospect. I never thought he was an NBA prospect, and he might thrive in the NBA, and I will still not think he's an NBA prospect. being honest, my thing with Ibua and a lot of my conversations with people about Ibua start with me asking them, why do you think he's an NBA prospect? And people mentioned the tools first, yeah, which I do see them 6'7". I think he has like a 7'1", 7'2" wingspan.
Yeah, he's long.
So he's long. He's kind of explosive. He's explosive for his size. He can finish above the rim. Has good, strong frame. And the other thing people mentions when I say, what does he do as a basketball player? They mention how he's able to put the ball on the floor. But the thing with Ibua to me is that even though he's able to maybe attack a closeout or get to the rim in that sense, not in any sort of way he's a self-creator, but even though he can attack a closeout, what does he do with his ability to put the ball on the floor? And one archetype that I think is one of the most overrated archetypes in the draft is the quote unquote big who can handle. Like, because generally bigs who are presented as big who can handle don't really do anything else but handling. Like, it's not big who can handle and shoot. It's not big who can handle and pass. It's not big who can handle and finish at the rim. It's just he can dribble the ball. That's it. I don't get it. Like, yeah. So I didn't want to be too mean on Ibua, but that's just how I feel. I don't really think he's an NBA prospect at all.
Yeah, I mean, with his physical tools, if he actually had basketball ability, he would be a very highly regarded prospect. Cause his physical tools are really good. Like they are, but he has like no basketball ability.
Yeah. It's not great. So I think that's all of the international guys we have for today. So, I mean, if you guys are ready to move on to our catching eye section, just guys who we've watched recently on tape that have popped to us, I think ready to get started there. So, Ignacio, you have some guys that you want to talk about? You want to start?
Yeah. First off, shout out to a few guys that we didn't get a chance to talk about them because we don't want this podcast to run for 3 hours. But Uroš Trifunović, 6'6", 6'7". I don't really recall the measurements, but he's over 6'6". Secondary initiator, but also lead initiator at times for Partizan and for Serbia. Someone who really needs to develop physically, kind of a slight frame, but at that size with that initiation potential and some previous streaks of really good shooting, especially playing for Serbia, someone to keep an eye on, maybe not for this year, but for the next 2 years. He was born December 2000, so he's still 19 years old, so he's still young. And I saw that Max posted a few clips on Twitter today about Trifunović. So I was like really happy that someone else like really thinks Trifunović is a good player. And then Bit Krajci from Czech Republic playing in Saragossa. To me, Krajci is enough. The best thing he does is spacing the floor at his size, and has a really quick first step, so he can beat guys to the rim, and also has some secondary initiation potential. So someone, again, no, I don't think this year, I don't think he's a prospect for this year, but someone who can do some initiation and defend wings and space the floor is someone definitely to keep an eye on for the second round in the next maybe 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, Trifunović was pretty impressive. He like needs to develop his body for sure. Needs to just play less upright. I mean, not an explosive player, but I mean, his ball handling, his transition passing, his mechanics were nice. I think his effort defensively, again, in spite of his frame, was impressive. But just a guy who needs to develop a lot physically. But I mean, he's so young. He did declare for the draft this year. I don't think he appears on ESPN's board. I would guess he probably pulls his name by the deadline. But someone going forward that will be fun to monitor, because he was pretty impressive.
I was definitely impressed by his difficult shot making. I mean, after watching him at Partizan, I mean, basically, like Ignacio said, playing with Serbia, he had some really impressive tough shot making on difficult pull-ups and step backs that seemed to be pretty like consistent. And like we said, the mechanics are good. I mean, yeah, there's just a lot to like as a potential pass dribble shoot guy at 6'6", despite the physical limitations. And again, not a prospect really for this year, likely. I'd say probably pulls out, but an interesting player to track going forward.
Yeah, so I wanted to add one more guy. This is in the catching guy in this section of the podcast. Exactly. I wanted to add one more guy, not someone eligible this year, but the guy that I'm most impressed recently that has popped up for me is Matthew Strassel. And if you're doing some scouting for the 2020 draft, you might have actually watched him, because he plays with Theo Maledon for Aspel. He's going to be eligible in the 2021 draft. Probably the best point guard, best pure primary initiator in that class, even though Strassel is someone more of a small combo guard. But I wanted to bring him up for two reasons. First, his ability to contribute to a Eurocup team and a French first division team at his age, which to me is impressive. And once Maledon is gone to the NBA next year, his role is probably going to go up. And second, he looks even more impressive than Maledon in some games. Like, I was watching the game from Aspel versus Real Madrid. I wanted to watch Theo Maledon, and I just kept going back to Strassel, like, because I thought he was more impressive. But maybe it's just a night test thing. The size is going to be the limitation for him, for sure. I think he's 6 feet on the dot. So unless he can maybe grow a couple of inches, it's hard to be as a 6 feet scoring guard. It's hard to make the NBA. But I do think his passing ability is good enough, at least for a backup role. But someone to, if you're watching Theo Maledon, try to keep an eye on number 32 because he's interesting and he's going to be one of the guys to really watch for next year.
All right, Max, I can go with mine or you can go with yours, sir.
No, I don't have any this week, Ben.
Really? I wasn't sure if you just didn't put any one or
No, I don't have any. I mean I can do one. I can always rag on Sadiq Bey. We're already going long, so
I mean, mine isn't really a serious one. It's kind of just me wanting to gush about one of my favorite guys.
Do it quickly. You have 30 seconds.
John Elmore deserves all the time in the world, and yeah, I'm talking about John Elmore, who plays now. He plays the Italian league with Trieste, I think. I caught him watching an Ibua game, and I love John Elmore so much. I miss watching him play at Marshall so much. He hit like he hit difficult pull-up after difficult pull-up. He was like putting guys in jail and doing like really advanced pick and roll manipulation and like blending floaters into lobs. It was beautiful and it made my heart happy. And I would give everything to the GM that gives John Elmore an NBA contract. I do love John Elmore, and that's all I have to say on that.
Ben, I changed my mind. I do have one because you reminded me of one. Gershon Yabusele played four games for Asvel this year, and I watched one of them, and he had the most hilarious missed dunk that I have seen this year, where he took off about 8 feet from the rim and had absolutely no chance, got hit right in the chest, just walled, and was about like 4 feet short. It was incredible. I spent about 15 minutes laughing at it, and it made me very, very happy.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that it was a great episode in former NBA players playing abroad.
I love watching a team not knowing who I'm gonna find and finding, you know, former NBA players or finding former fringe draft prospects. I was watching a Spanish league game this week, and I came across Obradoiro, and they have Fletcher McGee and Mike Thumb in the same team.
I tweeted about that when I was watching them because it's incredible that they're on the same team.
So that was like the mid-major draft Twitter sleeper team special. Like,
I don't think anybody actually liked McGee or Dom as prospects, but oh my god, that's hilarious.
If you're nostalgic for like what was 2018, 2019 draft, I don't remember which draft were they. Yeah, but if you're nostalgic about the 2019 draft, go watch Obradoiro. You're gonna have a good time.
Yeah, you go to Ulm for Killian Hayes and you stay for the Archie Goodwin posters. Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Oh my god. It's so much fun. Like watching those Euro games, like besides just good basketball, you never know what you're gonna get with some of these teams and their random former NBA players. Like it's really fun.
Yeah.
So I think that's an apt way to end this podcast, just because we could talk on this forever. Again, big thanks to Ignacio for coming on and sharing some of his insight with us. It was really fun. You can follow him on Twitter at Eyreball. I believe it's at EYREBALL on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he does great work on his own Twitter and with the Stepien, so you can follow him. Follow us, the podcast, at Prep2ProPod on Twitter. Follow me at Ben_Pfeiffer_. Follow Max at MaxAkeHarlan. And yeah, keep leaving those 5-star reviews and DM Max and get your Synergy pages because they help us a ton. And it's an easy thing for people to do, and it really does mean a lot to us. and we're super appreciative to everyone who's left them so far. So yeah, this is a fun episode. Anything else anybody would like to say before we close?
I'm going to add to Max's offer of doing a synergy. If you leave a 5-star review or already left a 5-star review for this podcast, and or if you I'd rather it be a 5-star review, so let's do this. If you leave a 5-star review, and you choose an international prospect, I'm gonna send you my raw notes for that prospect. So I'm sending you my unedited notes. There's gonna be typos there. There's gonna be frustration. I remember calling a prospect in a frustrating source of events. I remember writing down that a prospect was a Zac Efron looking motherfucker. So you're not gonna find that prospect because he's a 2004 Italian guy, whatever. But you're gonna find that sort of stuff in my raw notes. So leave a 5-star review, or if you've already left a 5-star review and you choose a prospect, I'm gonna send you my notes. And if you retweet this and you ask for it, I'm going to send you a picture of my cats because they're cute. And people like cat pictures. My cats are cute for me. Are like kids who people think they are cute, but they are ugly for the rest of the world. So, yeah. Come to this podcast for the international players and stay for pictures of cats and strange NBA prospects.
I need to create a bunch of burners so that I can get Ignacio's notes.
Okay, so know that if we ever ask you to come on Prep to Pro, you have to think of a better bribe than that. We have to get better every single time.
Oh my god.
Okay, I think that's more than enough for today.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, as always, we're gonna have, like, Max and I have exciting things planned over the next months. Unfortunately, won't have the draft like we were supposed to, but hopefully Prep to Pro can fill the void for you guys. So I'm going to make an executive decision, and we're going to end this at less than an hour and 45. So have a good day out there. Stay safe, and see you later.
See ya.